I know Daniel will meet somebody.
Okay, Boker Tov to everyone. Anachachot, Omazinim. We read this week the Sedra of Kisisa. Kisisa Suresh Ben Israel deals with a disparate number of topics, starting with the Mitzvah Machsa Shekel, and then the Kiyar, the Ketores. And then we come to the designation of Bezalel as the architect of the Mishkan, the one who assumes the role for the Mishkan, Bezalel being all the age of 13 when he was chosen. So Torah says, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, starts number one. What's that?
Wow.
13. Precocious youth. Rei Karasi B'Shem, Bezalel Ben Uri Ben Hur, L'matei Yehuda. You see, I've chosen by name, reputation, Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, Va'amaleo so Ruach Elokim, B'chochmo, U'v'suno, V'das. And I filled him with Ruach Elokim, the Spirit of Hashem, Chochmo, Tevuno, Das, wisdom, understanding, knowledge. Know what's interesting? It says, Karasi B'Shem, I have called him, Lashon Avar, past tense. All right? Meaning what? So that's what the Medrash picks up on. Kach Posach Rabbi Tanchuma Bar Abba. Quotes the Posach in Iyov. Oz Ra'o Vayisapara Hechina Vegam Chakara. God saw and related it. Hechina prepared. Vegam Chakara investigated. God, before creation, saw in the distance of time, that the Jewish people would receive the Torah. But for our acceptance of the Torah, the world would not have been created. Shenema, that's the pasuk here, Oz Ra'a Vayisapra, God saw and related. And the pasuk continues, Maksiv Achara, Vayomer Lo Adam, Hein Yiras Hashem, Hi Chochma. And God said to man that the reverence for God, that is wisdom. Meaning tying the creation of the world to the creation of man, and not only man who's God-fearing, Vein Adam El Yisrael, and man is prototypically the Jewish people. Shenemar va'at pasuk in Yecheskel va'atein soni son marisi adam atem. You, I placed you, my sheep, my flock of my pasture, adam atem, meaning the Jewish people, the prototype of Adam. What's the first part? God saw that the Jewish people, Yisrael Mekablenes HaTorah, She'ilu Lechein Lovar HaOlam. But for that, the world would not have been created. What does that teach us? But for Kabbalah HaTorah, the world would not have been created. In fact, you see this Gemara says, Vayer Vayvok HaYom HaShishi, right? That's how we start Kiddush every Friday night. Why HaShishi? What's the hay? All the other days are described without the hay. Vayi erev ayvoka yom echad, yom sheni, yom shlishi. Not yom hashlishi, yom chamishi. It's only yom hashishi. Why hashishi? Melamed shehisna HaKadosh Baruch Hu maaseh bereishis. That God made a condition with creation. If the Jewish people accept the Torah, mutov. If not, I restore you to tohu vavohu, to chaos and void. So you see, in fact, from there and from here as well, if not for Kabbalah Satar, the world would not be created, that the world has a physical creation with which we're all familiar. Look outside, see the created world. But the world also has a spiritual creation, and that's the world of Torah. And the two are intertwined. They're not separate. They're intertwined. It's not as if the world was created and then Torah was added to it. Rather, Torah, the spiritual creation, is an inherent part of the world, inherent part of the idea of the plan of creation. And if not for that, there is no creation, there is no world. The world's not meant to be simply a place where man and animals indulge their physical natures, live and die, but rather a world in which the animals live, serve man, plants, minerals, etc., but man is here to perfect his soul. And if not for that, the world has really no meaning. Yes?
Why wasn't the Torah given to us at creation?
Right. That's a good question. You see, the Midrashim do deal with that It's because the world would not be ready for it at the time. I mean, the world had to be...
If the world was just created with it, it would have been a non-issue. It would have just been...
Right. So man had to be prepared. We'll see in a little while also. Man has to be prepared to receive the Torah. That's not to say the world was born without mitzvos or without any type of spiritual creation. Because we see Adam himself was commanded, all right? And his command basically was a tzivui that had no physical import to it, but only spiritual import, to see if he was an Eved Hashem, built into creation. And then you have the Shev Mitzvah B'nai Noach, and you have the whole world of Adam Rishon was considered the first base of Mikdash. So what's created with that? But Torah, as the unique possession of the Jewish people, that only came later. In other words, they were failed attempts on the part of man to achieve this level of spiritual connection to God, right? Adam stumbled, even Noach in a sense stumbled, until God chose Avram, and then it's the family of Avram. The plan really was that everyone should be involved in the service of God in the same way. That was the initial plan. That didn't work out because of man's choice. But even that plays a role. We'll get to that in a little while. It's also true. That's a good answer. That if the Torah was given to man at the same time, there wouldn't have been choice. But on the other hand, keep in mind that Adam was given a Torah. He was given one mitzvah, and then he was given other mitzvahs as well. The Shem Mitzvah B'nai Noach are really traced to a pasuk that God says to Adam. It's Avashem Elokim to Adam. The man was created. The first man was commanded in those commandments. So in a sense, he had that choice as well. You can't have mitzvos without choice. But the Torah's system, that came later, only for the Jewish people. Incrementally, it was increased to the world. And you see, same question is asked. Why didn't the Jewish people receive the Torah in Mitzrayim? Why do we have to leave to go receive the Torah 7 weeks later? Why not take the Torah, get the Torah right away? So you see, there's stages. You have to... It's like a birth. You give birth, right? So you have to wait for the maturity. It's correct. That's correct. That's the first point. By the way, why are we called Tzon? Because a Tzon, the sheep, always looks to the shepherd for sustenance, for guidance. All right, let's look on. Next, Oz, the Medrash Darshan is the pasuk from Iyov. Oz ra'av ayisapira, he saw and related, b'sinai, hechina, prepared, Be'omoid, Mishkan. V'gam hakara, investigated as well. Be'arvas Moav, Be'ilah HaDvarim, in the plains of Moav, right before we enter Eretz Yisrael. What is it saying? Again, what is foreseen? So in fact, there are three pillars to the existence of this nation, of the Jewish people. One is, of course, Sinai, and that means Torah. Torah is the essential connection between man and God. But then you have Ol Moed as well. Ol Moed is not just the Avodah, which is true, but Ol Moed represents the permanence of the Shechina, the divine presence in our midst. It's not just that God gave us a law book, told us how to live, and then abandoned us, but rather Torah is accompanied by the Shechina, by the divine presence that rests on Klal Yisrael, and then that's Barvos Moav, Be'el HaDvarim. At the end of the Torah, Arvos Moav means when we officially became a nation on the verge of our entry into the land of Israel. So you have those three things. You have Torah, you have Shechina, Eretz Yisrael, and combined they make up what the Am Hashem is. And now the Medrash continues, Davar Acher, again quoting the Pasuk and expounding it. Oz Ra'av Ayisapra, God saw and related. Amar Rabbanon, the Chachamim said, Tzarech Adam Elios Notel Moshal, a person has to learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu how God acted here. Note all the verbs, Ra'av, Ayisapra, Echina, Chakara. What's the lesson? A person has to learn from Hashem, Lomar, Pirko, O Agadaso, O Midrasho, Bishoshu Mevakesh. Bishoshu Mivakesh La'amra Matzibor. Forgot to put the other recorder on. Let's see, that's why we used to. Bishoshu Mivakesh La'amra Matzibor. When a person is going to give a lecture in Torah in public, he should learn from Hashem and prepare first. Lo Yomar, he shouldn't say, Hoil shani yode biyofe. Since I know my material very well, kshek kones lidrosh, ani omer. So when the speech starts, I'll start speaking, right? We call it off the cuff. I'll just speak. I know my material, and I'll just wing it. Omer Rabbi Acha, Racha said, no, min hoil okim atolomed. You should learn from God. Kishibikesh lo martor li Yisrael. When God sought to teach the Torah, tell us the Torah. Amora arba pa'amim beino levein atzmo. God said it, so to speak, to himself four times before he conveyed it to us. Ad shalom amora li Yisrael. Shenemar oz ra'o v'yasapara hechina v'gam chakara v'acharkach v'yomer la'adam. V'chein v'yadaber elokim es kol hadvrim o'ela v'acharkach le'mor li Yisrael. Meaning, you see, four times, four verbs are used, verbs of preparation to transmit the Torah to the Jewish people, and only then, Vayomer La'adam, only then was it said to us, and that's the pasuk that precedes the Aseret Dibros, Vayedaber Elokim Eskol Advarim Ha'ela, that God spoke all these things, right? Meaning, so to speak, is preparation, V'chakach Le'mor, then it's said to us, it's given to us. Okay, that's a strange medrash. God had to prepare once wasn't enough. Even once sounds like too much. The Torah comes from him. Yeah, so what does this mean? Right, so of course, it's not a commentary on God, of course. It's really a commentary on us. You see, when Rav Acha said, I'm sorry, when the Rabbanan say that Sar Chodim Lios Notel Mashal, that we have to learn from God in the way we act, we have to learn from the way God prepared the Torah, so to speak, for us, how we ourselves should perceive to the Torah. The Torah is given to us, but that does not make the Torah our personal possession, such that we could do with it whatever we want, read into the Torah whatever we want, and say about it whatever we want. That's not the Torah. The Torah to us is not like a table that you have that a carpenter can come along and make a chair out of the table. That's not the Torah. The Torah is given to us with its laws, with its corollaries, with its methodology of psak, and a person is not allowed to take a possession of the Torah in such a way that the Torah becomes just his personal plaything in which he can read into it all the values that are dear to him, all the ideas that occur to him, and all the different piska halacha that he chooses. That's not the Torah. We have to look at the Torah and the way it was given to us and recognize that there's tremendous forethought in the Torah. There's nothing left to chance. There's nothing that's random or haphazard. There's no human circumstance with which the Torah does not deal. And I think that's the notion that Kishibikesh Lomar Torah Yisrael Amara Arba Pe'amim Beino Levein Atzmo. Shouldn't think that when the Torah was, again, so to speak, in its preparation form to be delivered to the Jewish people, that it was almost, that it was done, yeah, again, only we can speak in these terms, of course, but it was done hastily, without any real planning, that it's either missing things that we have to add, or that it's demanding too much of us that we have to subtract. That's not the Torah at all. It's completely planned. Torah Hashem Tumimo, it's a perfect system, and it's only when we look at it as a perfect system. And, of course, a byproduct of that is to see ourselves as imperfect practitioners of the system. Not that we're perfect and the system is imperfect, but the system is perfect and we're imperfect. We look at it that way, and we see the way the whole Torah is presented to us, laid out to us by Kadosh Baruch Hu, with preparation, with the notion that God only gave us such that we could accept, especially in terms of the Dor HaMidbar. But even to us as well today, if we look at the Torah like that, a lot of the turmoil that exists in the modern world would dissipate. Because now we think that the Torah has, rough edges that we have to chip away or hone away and make sure it's more accommodating to us. That's not the way the system is set up. But that's not what God gave us. That makes it seem more like a human system than a divine system. A human system has to be adjusted constantly. You see, it's a secular law. American law has to adjust from generation to generation. You try this, you try that. Right? You try prohibition, it doesn't work, so you permit it again. You ban these things, you permit these things. That's great for a secular system. Man is able to make adjustments. By the way, usually the adjustments are poor. Sometimes they're beneficial, but it can go either way. The Torah is not like that. The Torah is a holistic system, and when we start tampering with it, we tamper with it at our peril. That's the point. That's the preparation. That's the way the Torah was given to us. Everything was investigated. The one who created man and woman is the same one who gave us the Torah that says this is what pertains to the man and the woman to find their contentment in life and their connection with Hashem. Yes, ma'am.
Where does it say that? Where does that come
from? That's a pasuk from Iyov.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that?
That's at the top.
Is it here?
Yeah, very top, second line. Iyov Chav Ches Chav Zayin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, okay, thank you.
What's that?
What does this whole measure have to do with
it? So we started by saying, why did the Torah use the word karasi b'shem, the past tense of Bezalel? So see, the fact that Bezalel would act, all right, the fact that Bezalel would be needed, okay, that was already foreseen by Kadosh Baruch Hu, because the Torah, the Mishkan, Ol Moed, that's all part of the plan. There should be a people. That plan really predated creation. The Dover Acher is just the style of Chazal. Once they quote the Pasuk in Iyov, then they're quoting other things relating to that as well. Now, look at the next one. So I quoted the whole Pasuk here. Vayitein el Moshe, God gave the Luchos to Moshe, kichalosolo daber ito b'har Sinai. When he finished speaking to him on Har Sinai, God gave the Torah to Moshe. When he gave Shnei Luchos Hoidus, the two tablets of the testimony, Luchos Evan, Ksuvim Etzba Elokim, tablets of stone written with the finger of God. All right. Now, Mefarshim comment on at length on this pasuk. Obviously, it's a very interesting and somewhat complicated pasuk. I want to focus on one aspect of it, an idea that you find several times in Rashi, elsewhere, based on the Medrash here. Mahu kichaloso. Vayitene Moshe kichaloso. Kichaloso means when he finished. Kichaloso, when he finished l'daber ito. All right? What word does kichaloso remind us of? Don't be shy. A kala, a bride. She's not shy. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rish Lakish said, "Kol mi shemotzi divrei Torah ve'enon arevin al shomehem ki kala shehi areva lebala." Anyone who utters words of Torah and they're not pleasant to their listeners, as a kala is pleasant to her chasan, Noach lo shelo amoron, better he should not have said it. Lama shebisha shenasang on Hashbaruch Ator Yisrael, haisa chaviva alehem kakala shehi chaviva al benzuga. How do we know this? When God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, it was as precious to us as the bride is to her husband. Minayin shenemar vaitena Moshe kichaloso ledaberito. The Luchos were given to Moshe, Kichaloso, when God finished. It's a play on words, Kichaloso, Kaloso. What finished and bride. All right, so now you'll ask the question, what in the world is the connection between finishing and the bride? All right? It's a homonym, I get that. It's phonetically similar, but obviously we're talking the ideas. Why would they think to relate the notion of a bride to something being finished, or even in context, kichaloso l'daberito, when God finished speaking to Moshe. So as you know, I was given a gift a few months ago by someone in the neighborhood, a parish on Chumash by Rav Avram Leib Shur from learned in Slobodka, was a Rav in America for a time. I think his grandson lives in our community. It's actually his daughter-in-law comes to shir on occasion. He explains as follows. He says, and you know, I think most people, certainly the Rabbanus, recognize this. People have a threshold when it comes to listening to a speaker. You know, they max out at a certain point. Beyond that, it's very hard to listen. Once that threshold is crossed, so they turn off. That's why, you know, you have to know, for example, on a Shabbos morning, you can't speak, 30, 40, 60 minutes. You have to cut it off. You have to try to match what you're saying to the attention span of the audience. Too much is no good. You should know, over time, the attention span of audiences has declined precipitously to the extent that today children suffer from it because they get all these images when they're young of television. It's bright, it's alive, it's vibrant, it's colorful, and no teacher can compete with that. So they wind up with very, very short attention spans. In Europe, you know, whenever there was no entertainment, people would listen to a shiur 3-4 hours. I remember even in my day, I remember years ago, I always think about it because it astounded me, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik came to give a shiur in our yeshiva, and at the time he was basically crippled. He was a victim of a stroke that left him mostly paralyzed. He had the use of one arm and one leg. Mm-hmm. It took him literally, I would say, 20 minutes to walk from the door to the place where he was giving the shiur, just the distance here. Then he spoke from 6:30 to 10:45. That was a shiur without a break. All right. It's 4 hours and 15 minutes. And you know, the time flies. Like when I give such a long shiur, the time flies. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know it. It's not like that anymore. It has to be a special circumstance. The Lincoln-Douglas debates, imagine that taking place today. They debated 7 times over the course of, I think, 2 months. The format was one person spoke for, without a microphone, by the way, one person spoke for 60 minutes, the other spoke for 90 minutes, and then the other person rebutted for 30 minutes. Okay? That's 180 minutes of consecutive speaking. That's 3 hours. All right? And they didn't, big crowds came out, 1858. What was the competition then?
No television.
No television, among other things. But people had longer attention spans. In any event, the bottom line, by the way, I've seen this as well, you know, the best-selling books, the chapters are like 2-3 pages. It's unbelievable. How does a book have a chapter? I have paragraphs that are 2-3 pages. How does a book have 2 or 3 pages per chapter? It's amazing. But in fact, that's what it is. So all that is true, except for one relationship, and that's the Kala and the Chasan, right? The Kal Nechasson can engage in long conversations. We all know this. How many times do you hear that, so-and-so, usually it's the man, he never says a word. Teenagers, quite never says a word. You wonder how he's ever going to talk to a girl. And then he meets his Kal, and he doesn't stop talking, or at least he's a good listener. He lets her talk on and on. All of a sudden, someone who is shy and reticent becomes a conversationalist, or at the very least, a good listener. Okay? How does that happen? It's because of the relationship between them. It's the relationship of love. The chasan can't get enough. Now you understand the pasuk. Vayitena Moshe kichaloso l'daberito. God gave the Torah to Moshe. God gave the luchos to Moshe when he finished speaking to him. The same relationship that a chasan and kala have, that's our relationship of Torah. It's kichaloso. When it ends, when the shiur ends, you want more. There's a feeling that you didn't get enough. It ended too soon, right? I'm waiting for the day, you know, when I speak Shabbos morning and people yell out, "Encore, encore!" You know, I'm waiting for that day. But that's how the Jew is supposed to approach the Torah, with that feeling of the more you talk about it, the more you want to talk, all right? You know, a couple dates, I don't know if they still do this anymore, but let's say they date, they talk on the phone. People talk on the phone. No, they text. That's why it's much shorter. But let's say they talk on the phone, right, and they could talk for an hour or 2 hours, whatever it is, and they hang up, and then, you know, one thinks to say something else, they talk again. They call back. It's a constancy of the interaction, incessant communication, because of the feeling of love that exists. That's what the Torah is. That's the analogy that Chazal make between Kala and Kala. Just to continue, Amar Rabbi Levi, Amar Shlakish, again, another analogy of the Kala Kalaso. Ma Kala zo mikushetes be'esrim v'arba mine tachshitin, just like the bride is adorned 24 types of jewelry, halavai. Kach Talmud Chacham tzarech lio zariz be'esrim v'arba sarim. So too, a Talmud Chacham has to be assiduous in 24 different types of knowledge, meaning the 24 Sifrei Tanakh. So it means the Torah is our bride, all right? The bride at the wedding. You look at a bride at a wedding, how does she present herself?
Beautiful.
Perfect, exactly. Beautiful. Perfect. There's nothing missing. So too, for a person to be a Talmud Chacham, there can't be anything missing in his knowledge. So the reference is Tanakh, because Tanakh is a composite of the entire Torah, in a sense, and Tor Shebaal Peh, but it means Torah in its more expansive form. Can't be any gaps in knowledge. It's Tanakh or Talmud, Rishonim, Achronim, philosophy, history, etc. That's all part of the repertoire of the Talmud Chacham. Has to be a sense of completeness, that there's nothing missing, just like the Kala. Okay. Dovr Acher, number three, on the left side. Vayitena Moshe. God gave, again, God gave the Luchos to Moshe. Omer Rabbi Abbo, listen to this. Kol Arbo Em Yom She'osa Moshe L'mala Hayolome Torah V'Shocheach. For 40 days, Moshe was on top of the mountain, didn't eat a drink. Lechem lochalti, maimel shasisi, was a level of a malach. He learned Torah, except for one thing, one very human dimension. He kept forgetting. There's a lot to learn. Amar lo ribon ha'olam, God said to him, Yeshli arbom yom, I have 40 days for you. I'm sorry, Moshe said to God, ribon ha'olam, master of the world, I have 40 days, I don't know anything yet. Time is running out, can't leave the people so long. Turns out I left the people just a little too long, but can't leave them for so long. Me'o sakadosh baruch hu, what did God do? Misha hishlim arbom yom, after the 40 days completed, Nasan Lakadosh Baruch Hu Esatar Matana. God gave him the Torah as a gift. Shenemar Vayitena Moshe. Vayitain is Matana. V'chikol HaTorah Lamad Moshe. I will get that in a second. So the Torah was given to us as a gift. What does that mean, that the Torah is a gift? It is a gift. But what's the gift? The gift works together with hard work, with effort. All right? If a person is omel b'Torah, if a person is diligent in study of Torah, applies to mitzvahs as well, to some at least. Nonetheless, there's still a quality of matana as a gift. Many of the Gedolim speak of this also, that you think there's a limit to man's intellectual attainments, and there is a limit, but nonetheless, they're able to exceed the limit, and that they recognize as matana. Something which is not clear, right? Then it becomes clear. That's a gift. That is a gift. Because in fact, the Torah, there's just too much. It's too vast, all right? Granted, I should say also, it's matana of opportunity as well. But nonetheless, it's an opportunity. Years ago, I'm trying to remember who it was. It was a public school came to us, a seventh grade, from one of the local schools, either here or Anglo, I don't remember which one. And they came to Beis Medrash, and maybe half the class was Jewish, but all they knew of was the Torah, all right? And they looked around, and they asked me, like, what is all this? So I said, well, this is the Torah. He said, well, these are Bibles? Well, Bibles, you know, everything is different. I said, no. There's a written Torah, there's an oral Torah. They're commentaries. They're the words of the sages, from the time the Torah is given down to our day. I mean, new Sfarma published every week. And they were shocked. They had no idea that the Jewish people had such a literature, such a legacy. In fact, the Torah is vast. That's the next point that's made. And because of that, to be Mekabel Torah does require Matnas Hashem too. It is somewhat as a gift to be able to perceive as much as we can. The Al-Sheikh says here, by the way, that like a fetus is formed, according to our understanding, after 40 days, it assumes a form. So too Moshe was on the mountain for 40 days. Until then, he was really formless. But after 40 days, then he became a kli that was worthy of Kabbalah Satorah. And Al-Sheikh says that was the matana, that once he became a kli, then God restored to him all the knowledge that he had forgotten, and that became the very basis of the Torah that was given to us at Sinai, the Torah Shebaal Peh. Here, the Shem Yishmuel comments also that we could learn and forget. Right? How long will you retain this year? How long will I retain it? Maybe a couple of hours.
Forever.
Oh, in what sense is it forever? I like his style. In what sense is it forever? The Shem Yishmuel said, a roshem, an impression, always remains. Right? What's the impression? So I can tell you this is true from my own experience. Chazal mentioned it, and I didn't realize afterwards until I heard it, then I realized the phenomenon. Sometimes you get the feeling you heard something before, right? You ever get that feeling? Who ever heard this idea before? What's
deja
that?
Deja vu.
Deja vu. Well, that's also something you've seen too. Okay, so there, I forget who says this, but, you know, when we're fetuses in the womb, a malach, the Gemara says, teaches the Torah, all right? Look, sometimes we hear things, we don't remember who they heard it from, but there's someone who says, yeah, sometimes we hear things, and it just rings true to us. Why? Because we learned in the womb, that's why. That's that feeling of the Oroshim is left, an impression. Even though we don't remember it, but nonetheless, an impression is made such that we hear it again. It's like we're relearning. Some things we grasp right away. Other things take longer. If we grasp it right away, sometimes because our intellects are good, but other times because we've heard it before, and therefore you relearn it, and it just reawakens what you've already known. Chozer v'neir. It's reawakened, and therefore becomes a lot easier to recall. But that's a matana as well. That's the roshem. So now the Medrash continues. Vaitena Moshe v'chikola Torah lamad Moshe. Did Moshe learn the entire Torah at Har Sinai? Ksiv ba Torah. It says about the Torah. It's a pasuk in Iyov again. The Torah is arukam eretz midar chavamini yom. The Torah is longer than the earth and wider than the seas. The expanse of Torah is infinite. So how is it possible to say Moshe Rabbeinu learned the entire Torah? Ularbom yom l'madam Moshe? Moshe, 40 days, that's all it took him? How could that be? Elowat klalim l'midag anish baruch l'moshe. God taught Moshe the principles. Hevi kichaloso l'daber ito. Once the principles were taught. Kaloso klal. Alright? Another play on words. Once the principles were taught, then Moshe Rabbeinu's knowledge of Torah, his Kabbalah Satorah, was complete. Because then he knew, once you have the principles and you have the formula by which you can apply the principles to new situations, once you have that, then you really have the whole Torah. So Moshe was taught categories. Moshe was taught principles. Now that's the famous Gemara Menachos Dav Chavtes. I darshan this last Shabbos, we learned in Shul, that Moshe Rabbeinu saw God on the mountain riding Tagin of the crowns in the Torah, written on the Osio Shatnis Getz. Those letters, Shin, Ayin, Tez, Nun, Zayin, Gimel, Tzadi, each letter in the Torah has a crown on it, three little dashes on top of it. So Moshe said, what is all this about? So God says, there's a certain person to come in the future, Akiva Ben Yosef Shmo, Rabbi Akiva, and he's going to expound Tilei Tilim Shel Halachos, mounds of Halachos, because of each tag on the letter. And of course the crowns represent something that's beyond the written world word. A dimension, like the crown on the king presents the king as something more than a human being, but a king. So too the crown on the letters indicate there's more to the letters than just the written letter. So Moshe said to God, show me? And he was transported, time machine style, to Rabbi Akiva's Beis Medrash. And they're learning something, and the Gemara says, Moshe did not know what was going on, could not follow, didn't understand the drasha, until Rabbi Akiva said, and he was upset by it, Rabbi Akiva said, they asked him, what's the source? And Rabbi Akiva said, halacha la Moshe mi Sinai. It's halacha for Moshe and Sinai. All right. Halacha Moshe Sinai, by the way, you should know, is a term. It generally means something that was given to God by Moshe on Sinai, but does not appear in the Torah. It's not explicit in the Torah. That's halacha Moshe Sinai. Once Moshe heard that, Niskara Daito, the Gemara says, he was satisfied. His anxieties were calmed. Why? Because now Moshe understood the entire system. That's what the Medrash is saying here. Moshe was given klalim, principles, categories, the ways to expound the Torah. That doesn't necessarily mean Moshe Rabbeinu necessarily foresaw every application of the Torah. But once the application is made, there's no doubt Moshe Rabbeinu could trace it back to the original because he was in possession of the categories. That's how we operate in Psak as well. That's why if there's a Psak that deviates from the categories, introduces new phenomena, then it becomes, there's a severance between that conclusion and Torah Misinai. Okay, number four, continuing this the Pasuk, Shnei Luchos Hoedus. There were two tablets of testimony. Mao Shnei Luchos. Why didn't he need two? Why wasn't the Torah? Why weren't the Aseret HaDibros just given to us on one? Less to break, easy to carry, right? Why two? So you have a number of interpretations here. Two, Keneged Shemayim Varetz, heaven and earth. Two, Keneged Chasam Akalo, the groom and the bride. Two, Keneged Sheish Shoshvinin, the two. A shoshvin is an escort, right? Today we have the best man, and what's the best woman called?
Right, maid of honor.
Maid of honor, right. So they accompany. The shoshvin accompany the chasen kala to the chuppah. Keneged ha'olam hazeh v'olam haba. Two, corresponding to this world and the next world. So what does all this mean? What does all this mean? So Shemayim Varetz, we see ready from the first medrash we discussed. That is to say, the Torah, in the form of the Luchos, the Torah is the fulfillment of creation. So therefore it's the guarantor that Shemayim and Arutz will continue to exist. Torah is that which links, in a sense, Shemayim Varetz. So that's the two. What about Chasen V'Kala? How would the two Luchos correspond to the Chasen and Kala? So Chasen and Kala are a situation, they're a symbol of unconditional love. The love of Chasen and Kala, they don't really know each other that well before. Today, sometimes, they only met three or four times. They barely know each other's names. So they don't know each other well, but nonetheless, there's a love between them that can grow. So the Torah is the symbol of the unconditional love between God and the Jewish people. That's Chasen and Kala, the Luchos. What about Sheish Shoshvinin? So the Shoshvin is a friend. They're friends, usually, of the Chasen and Kala. But I think it means something else. See, today, with the best man and the maid of honor, the bride and groom are expected to give them gifts, correct? Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a strange system. Here, the Shoshvin are the opposite. The Shoshvin give gifts to the Chasen and Kala. They're the ones who set up the chuppah. They're the ones who prepare the food and the clothing and everything. We should have such people existing today also. I think they call parents today, by the way. But, so I mean the Shoshvinim, what's that? The caterers, yeah. The Shoshvinim, the Shoshvin really represents a friend. In a sense here, it's a benefactor. So the Luchos, see the number of different aspects to the Luchos. Again, one is fulfillment of creation, one is the love between God and the Jewish people, and one is the benefits that accrue to us because of the Torah. All right, those are the benefits, meaning we get a number of benefits, certainly a closeness to God, but even a better life in this world through the Torah. And that, of course, just leads into the next one. It's Keneged Olam Hazeh Olam Haba, that Torah is the means for satisfaction and a true life, both in this world and the next world. And finally, Shnei Luchos Hoedus, Amar B'Chanina, Luchas Ksiv. Luchos, the word, is written Chaser, without the Vav. So it can be read as if it's singular as well. Luchas Ksiv, as if it's one, meaning equal. Lo Zo Gedolo Mizo. Neither one of the tablets was bigger than the other, meaning they're equal in size. What does that mean? So the Luchos were divided into five and five. The first five, mitzvos ben adam l'makom, between man and God. The second five, mitzvos ben adam l'chavero, between man and man. Lo zo gedola mizo. How's that for an important lesson? One is not bigger than the other. In fact, they're both equal. Okay. Turn the page. Well, Moshe comes down with the luchos, and what does he see? It's not a good scene. Egel Azov. God informs Moshe that things have gone awry down in the camp of Israel. Lech red ki shichei samcha. God says to Moshe, go down, your people have corrupted themselves. So note, here the Medrash says, Ha'om enksiv kan. It doesn't say, Lech rei kishiches ha'om, the nation has become depraved. Rather, Ela amcha, your people, right? Your people, Moshe's people. Amar Moshe, so Moshe says to God, Ribon Olam, Minayin heim ami. Why do you say they're my people? As much your people as my people. No, Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to Moshe, Amichohem, they are your people. Sha'at Shahoy B'Mitzrayim Amarti L'cho, when you were still in Egypt, I said to you, the plan was, Votseisi es Tzivosai es Ami, I will take out my hosts, my people. Who are my people? The Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. Amarti L'cho, Shalo Le'arev Bohem Erev Rav. I told you, do not commingle with them, the mixed multitude of Egyptians and others who came out with us into the Midbar from Egypt. Atah, God says, you, Shehayisa, Ono, V'choshir, you are so humble, you're so innocent, so pure. Amar Tali, you said to me, no, La'olam mikablu mashavim, we should always accept penitence. They want to join the grand march of Israel in the world, let him come. So God says, Ani hayisi yodea mahi masidim lasos. I always knew what they were about to do. Amarti l'cho lav, I said to you, don't do it. V'asisi ritzonecho. But I did your will. You wanted them out? Erev Rav? I took them out as well. V'heim heim shasu asa'egel. They're the ones who built the Egel, not the Jews. The Erev Rav built the Egel. It's always good to assign blame to know who did things. They're the ones who built it. They're the ones who caused my people to sin. Rei Maksiv. How do we know this? Because when they announced, the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis here, that they're building an Egel Azov, they didn't say Maksiv. Eila Eloheinu Asher Ha'elucha Meretz Mitzrayim. This is our God that we took out of Egypt. No, it doesn't say that. Eila Elohecha Yisrael. They said, this is your God. Meaning the Erev Rav, they were the ones who made the Egel, and they said, this is your God. Shehagerim She'alu Moshe Heimasa'uhu Ve'amru Yisrael Eila Elohecha. It's the Gerim. Here it doesn't mean convert, it means the stranger, the alien. The aliens who came up with Moshe, they're the ones who made it. They're the ones who said to the Jewish people, this is your God. L'kach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Omar L'Moshe, Lech Reid, Kishichei Samcha. Go down because your people have corrupted themselves. All right. At least we know now who to blame. Nonetheless, we are not completely guiltless, except, I should say, Shevet Levi, because we were uninvolved. But the Jewish people were not completely guiltless. The fact might have been that the Erev Rav built the Egel, but some Jews, at least 3,000 in all, got up and started dancing and partying and revelry and promiscuity and idolatry. So they joined the party too. So they're as much to blame as the people who made the party to begin with. All right, so what happened, though? What was Moshe thinking then? I mean, if God said to him, don't do it, why'd he do it? God, Moshe, what do you mean? God says to Moshe, Asisi Ritzonecha. God says to Moshe, don't do it. You said, nah, they're Bali Tshuva, we'll take them. What could go wrong? What could go wrong? I'm telling you it's going to go wrong. So why would Moshe do it then? What was he thinking? What do you say? It's a very interesting point. A very interesting point. We all know that Jews have a universal mission. And that is that, therefore, we want the non-Jews to join us. That's the vision of Yemos HaMashiach as well. That was Moshe's ratzon here. That's what Moshe wanted to accomplish. Moshe saw that the redemption was coming. The ultimate plan of mankind is Voya Hashem Umel HaKol HaAretz. for everybody? So Moshe said, now's the time. Let's bring everyone along. What did God say to him? It's premature. You're right. That's why Asisi Ritzonecha. Moshe was right in objective terms. Subjectively, he was wrong. Because God is saying to Moshe now, before embracing our universal mission, Jews have to be grounded in Torah. We have to strengthen ourselves first before we become universalists. And isn't that the reality of Jewish history? Time and again, even today, but time and again, Jews have been in the forefront of the most cosmopolitan, the most globalist, the most universalist movements, and almost always abandoned Torah as a result of it. Anyone who wants to perfect all of mankind, of course, has to start by perfecting himself. Look, what were the early communists? They were universalists. Many have said, Gedolim have said, something like communism could only have come from Jews because its idea is rooted in Torah, but it's rooted in distortion of Torah. So you take people without Torah, right, and set them loose with just a one value of Torah, then the world is destroyed, right? It's very interesting, you know, I don't think we have anything like this today, but the late 19th century, early 20th centuries, one of the troubling forces in the yeshivas, what's communism, all right? People, communists. The communist movement attracted a lot of support among yeshiva students, as did, from a different perspective, you know, the socialists, the Bundists, all right? Bundism was also a very powerful force, and a lot of Jews were swept up in it. Who do we know? I'm not telling any tales out of school. Rabbi Dov Revel, tremendous Talmud Chacham, became the first president of Yeshiva University. He spent a year in the Tsar's jail, arrested for revolutionary activity as a Bundist, and he was released, came to America, just, you know, abandoned the whole thing, went back to the world of Torah. these philosophies, especially communism now, which only exists really in the world today at Harvard and Berkeley, everywhere else has been repudiated, but these were dominant intellectual trends, and it was considered, in fact, immoral, in the early part of the last century, maybe the first half century, not to be a socialist, not to be a communist. It was considered immoral. So that's an ideal, it's a value, but God said to Moshe, it's premature. Think about it this way as well. You know, there are many Jews who care about the world, and because they care about the world, they just don't care about Jews as much, all right? How many Jews are there? Not a week goes by in which I don't read about some Jew giving a gift, a bequest of some sort, of $500 million, $1 billion to some secular organization, some global initiative, some museum, some art gallery, something which speaks to man in terms of universal man, because to them, being Jewish is too small a thing. That's the danger that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, perceived and said to Moshe, Hey Masu Oso, V'Gormu La'ami L'Chato. If you get involved in universalism too soon, too prematurely, the whole Torah system will be lost. In fact, that was the danger of the Egel Azov. Finally, number six, the Torah says, Psol Lucha. After Moshe breaks the Luchos, God said, you broke them, you pay for them, now you got to make new Luchos. So you will make the new Luchos. But Psol Lucha, you'll carve out for yourself, new tablets. Hapsolas shaloch, the psolas, the chips, the excess, will be yours. Misham ha'eshir Moshe. From this Moshe became wealthy. What were the luchos made of? Precious stone. All right. Let's say it was sapphire, diamond, whatever it was. So you have to carve it out, make two luchos out of them. But as you're carving, you shave it off. There are little fragments of stone that fall to the ground.
You're saying the whole luchot was like a
precious
big sapphire?
Stone. Yes, precious stone.
Sapphire?
No, it was two different luchos. I don't remember what the stone was. But let's say it was...
How did they find such a big sapphire or emerald?
Where they get the stones from. It's a good question. So Chazal say, when the mon started falling, it fell with precious stones as well.
Wow.
Yeah, mon.
And
makes you want to prepare breakfast in the morning. Who knows?
How could Moshe do it himself? How could he rewrite the Torah himself?
No. So the Torah says, psolecha, right? And v'chosafti al haluchos. Es hadvarim, God says, I'll write on them, but you prepare them. Now, it's because you broke the original luchos, you have to replace them. But the benefit to Moshe was that he got to keep the shavings of the precious stone, the chips that fell off as he was carving it. Okay, what are the chips of precious stones that are carved? Very valuable. All right. So from this, Moshe became wealthy. It was a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, din hu she'itol osam psolos Moshe. It's just that Moshe should receive this psolos, these precious stones. Why? Ela Yisrael shelo nisasku b'mitzvos nosatilam kol tuv eretz Mitzrayim. Jews who were not involved in mitzvahs at all, they ran around the day before the Exodus. Shenemar v'Hashem nasan eschein ha'om. They went around. They during the days of Choshech, they found out who had what, entitled to the valuables, and they took all of them. They became wealthy. Of course, by the way, that wealth destroyed them because that wealth was used to build the Egel Hazav. Moshe she'osak batzmosov shel Yosef ye'ani. Is it fair then that Moshe, who didn't run around trying to enrich himself, but rather he saw, too, extracting the bones of Yosef's coffin from the Nile to take with them into the Midbar, like Yosef had adjured his brothers. Should Moshe then be poor? Etain lo es apsola sheyashir. So God said, I'll make him wealthy as well. All right, so what does this mean? What does it mean? So Moshe, of course, had tzchar mitzvah, right? He had the reward for the mitzvah of taking Atzmus Yosef. What does he care whether he has, any money? Where is he going to spend the money in the Midbar anyway, right? Yes, you should know, Chazal say, that the Jews did have associations in the Midbar with itinerant peddlers. That's, they got a bunch of things. These caravans would pass through, they had money or valuables to trade, and they would buy other things, you know, what they wanted from the peddlers as well. But nonetheless, Moshe Tzchar Mitzvah, the reward for Mitzvah of Atzmus Yosef. What does it matter that he has no money? Food is coming from heaven, he has his own tent, what else does he need? No tuition to be paid, he's teaching everybody. So the answer is that in terms of wealth, there's an impression that's made on the Hamonam, on the people, on the masses. If people thought that Torah and mitzvos required poverty, the Yetzer Hara would be mekatreg. The Yetzer Hara would be just aroused even more than it usually is and would prosecute the Torah in such a way that people would just want to abandon it, as if it's hard to do. It would have been much harder to do mitzvos. Yeah, how do we know this? Because there are people every year complain about the price of an esrog or the price of matzah, okay? And then they'll spend that same amount going out on a Matzah Shabbos. But when it comes to spending on a mitzvah, Yetzer is makatreg. Oh, they're starting $60 this year, right? Go out to dinner, okay? One time on a Tuesday night, and don't spend $60 at any decent restaurant. So why are you complaining about the esrog? It's because of the Yetzer Hara. A mitzvah, that's what it should cost. They're ripping you off. People are making millions off you, etc. Well, said another way, how many people do you hear complain about the cost of tuition, right? Yeshiva tuition. And they're going away to a hotel for Pesach, which is like one tuition paid right there, if not more. It's because, again, Yetzer Hara is mekatreg. That's how the masses look at it. So that's one way. That's one issue. Conversely, the Shomer Mitzvos should not feel any sense of loss or deprivation, as if they're somehow losing out because they're focused on Torah, therefore they can't have any enjoyments in this world. So God says, no, din hu she'itol osam psolos Moshe, that this righted the scales. The Jewish people ran to get valuables. They were made wealthy as a result. So Moshe ran to get the Atzmus Yosef. Alachas kama v'kama, he should be rewarded as well. Note, by the way, it's not the Torah that brings wealth, nor is it the luchos that bring wealth, but what? The psolas. The psolas. It's something extra. It's the chips. It's an ancillary aspect to the Torah. I saw an advertisement the other day. Some Christian minister selling a book called The Bible Secrets to Wealth.
Yes.
You heard that?
On the radio.
On the radio, correct. The Bible Secrets to Wealth. That's not the purpose of the Bible, all right? I imagine, of course, if he was really wealthy, he wouldn't be selling the book to begin with. He'd be giving it away. But nonetheless, it's the psolas of Torah. It's not Torah itself, and we don't use the Torah to get wealthy, but it is an ancillary benefit to Torah. A person who lives along of the lines of the values of the Torah and does the mitzvos, so the Hashgacha rewards them. There's no doubt about it. It's not with wealth, but certainly with contentment with what the person has. The true person of Torah, and it sounds strange, you know, in our world, but doesn't need excessive wealth, needs just to have a sense of harchavas das, of psychological comfort and ease, to know that he has no cares, no worries, no anxieties, physical needs are taken care of, pleasures that such that he requires are granted as well, and that's all. Doesn't need more than that. Certainly doesn't need more to prepare 3, 4, 5 generations hence that they should benefit from that wealth. That's the gift Hashem gave to Moshe. It's the reward of mitzvos, but it remains the psolas, not the essence of Torah, but an ancillary aspect of Torah as well. Okay, I thank you all.